It's the RCR, the Retro Computing Roundtable Show 27 for Saturday, May 12th. But no matter where I go, there's one thing I like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? The RCR is brought to you by CyberEars. If you're looking for a hosting company for your podcast or audio files, then CyberEars is the right place for you. Go to CyberEars.com for all the details. Hi, everyone. I'm David Grillish, your host of the show, and I'm joined by my regular co-hosts, Carrington Vanston and Earl Evans. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey there.
How are we all doing this bright and shiny Saturday afternoon for me, morning for you, Earl, and afternoon for you, Carrington?
Who knows what time I'm in? Carrington time.
I am fan-super-tastic.
Ooh, that's very good.
Really good. So we're back with our regular scheduled broadcast. So we're going to just go right into our show with our first item of interest and news, which actually concerns us directly, and talking to our recent events with our iTunes listing. We had to change our feed, which we successfully did. But then the podcast has been hosted on MobileMe, my account, since it started. That's going to go away. Yeah, it's had its pros and cons. So we successfully changed that, but then we needed to see what I'm trying to remember what happened. Oh yeah, so there was no confusion. I deleted all the shows, which then deleted them all out of iTunes. So then I tried to
We had zero shows.
Yeah, even though the feed technically still worked, but then it wasn't updating the new shows in the iTunes listing. So I tried emailing the iTunes store two different times within like 2 weeks. They just didn't respond, didn't do anything. So then I just resubmitted the new show, which worked, but then we had the old one listed still, and then I emailed them again, asked them, could you please move over the comments, the reviews, and nothing happened. So
they
finally...
They back with a Raspberry.
Huh?
They just sent you a Raspberry back.
Yeah, just no response. So anyway, ultimately, we have a working iTunes store listing. Everything's in good shape, just there are no more reviews or comments that we used to have. So we're asking everyone, our loyal fan base, please just take a couple minutes out and go there, and if you would, just do a quick review of the show. And let's help build it up again, and hopefully we can get some new listeners and get bigger and more popular.
And you shouldn't have to – if you already had resubscribed to the feed that's hosted at rcrpodcast.com, you won't have to resubscribe. You're already – if you got this show automatically, for instance,
right.
you're good to go.
Yeah,
if you had to go somewhere to fetch this, then you're probably – as a listener, you're probably better off going off and resubscribing. You can find the feed either – if you look in iTunes now, you'll get the correct one, or if you just head over to rcrpodcast.com, there's a couple of different subscribe buttons you can click on.
And we did tweet about this, which obviously is 140 characters. Can't say a whole lot of details, but, you know, we'll keep tweeting and reminding people, and, you know, I'm sure it'll all work out.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, so moving on, we wanted to talk quickly just about, you know, last show was our one-year anniversary of the new and current RCR, and we're all doing videos, like a quick tour, just show our recording space, that sort of thing. So I actually finished mine this morning and finally got it up on the YouTube page. So there's a link in the show notes, so go check that out. I know Carrington and Earl, you guys are working on yours.
Mine's actually done. I've just been away for a bit, so I couldn't post it. And when I got back last night, there's no power in my building, so I'm actually recording at work today. I had to grab my computer and a microphone, so I'm not on my usual mic setup. Mm-hmm. So I'm on a totally different setup than the one that's in my video. But when I get back after recording, I'm going to head back home, and hopefully the power is on, and we'll upload mine.
Okay.
And I just got my video camera, a new little one of those HD Handycam kind of things.
Right.
And it's actually pretty awesome. It takes nice video, so I ought to be able to do that within the next couple of days here.
Okay.
And your video was awesome, David. I really enjoyed
Thanks
that.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm very happy with the quality, too. It's from my little Kodak. I'm looking at it. What is it? The ZI-8, which they don't make or sell anymore. I'm sure you can still buy them. You know, so it was a competitor to the...
No, I know what you're talking about, because I got the Kodak PlaySport, which is along the same lines.
Yeah.
I had mine done just by a sketch artist. It just drew me really quickly.
A courtroom artist?
Yeah, totally. I just said, I need you to make 24 portraits of me every second. Go.
But yeah, so this, I've been very happy with the quality of this little camera. So yeah. So anyway, check that out. One other mention I put in the show notes is, I don't believe that I talked about this on the last show, but I've spoken about it to some people and emails and different things, is I kind of went on a marathon of watching the show Hoarders. Did we talk about this, guys, on the show at all?
I have 6 copies of every episode on DVD.
So the reason I bring that up is because I found it somewhat therapeutic, and it just kind of gave me a good perspective of, you know,
this might say something about you, David.
Well, a fine line between, you know, collecting and hoarding, and I don't
step
believe
step one, admit you have a problem.
Right. So I recommend anybody to check it out.
Have a problem.
There's free shows on A&E, there's a link, and check it out. But I'm going to make a follow-up video showing what I've done now in my garage and thinning out my collection and making some serious decisions about, there's almost no point in having things, in my opinion, stuff I've had sitting on shelves, collecting dust, and just, I'd never had the time to ever do anything with them. What is the point of me owning them?
And I guess it depends on what the goal is. Like, I've never been a collector myself, but I think some people collect, to possess, to have it,
exactly.
To enjoy the having of it, not necessarily for use. Like, I'm personally all about, I want to have it, like, have the hardware to play with it, have games to play with them, and as soon as I'm done playing with it, out it goes. Like, I just don't hang on to things. But I think most collectors enjoy having the collection just for its own sake.
And me too. But I guess the tough decisions, the two things that geared me in my recent decisions, and by the way, I didn't throw anything out. I found new homes for them from the local group here or thrift stores that I knew don't destroy them. But like, for instance, I had, because it had been given to me, even in the 2.5 years I lived here in the Atlanta area, I had six original Commodore 64s. It's like, what? And so, you know, why do I need all those? So I just...
That you could combine them into a giant Commodore 384.
Well, awesome. So now as it stands, I have four. I have an original C64, I have a 64C in boxes, and then I have one that's original C64 out of the box. This is kind of the main one I mess with. And then I have an SX64. But anyway, so the two things that guided me are what are systems that I really can set up, break out, and really, you know, play with and enjoy. I'm keeping those. And then what are some of the most important ones, so whenever I do a talk, I can, you know, take these with me, and they're primarily for the show and tell. Which, for instance, some examples of that would be my Commodore PET, the Apple II Plus, and the what am I missing? TRS-80
Model
1.
Yeah.
And then I have an original PC and I don't have the original Mac. I have a 512. But anyway, so enough of that. It's just, you know, I recommend anyone to check out these videos. It kind of gives you a good perspective on things and their place in your lives and so on. But I'm going to make a follow-up video kind of showing what I did, and I'll be able to actually show off some other computers I couldn't show in the first video. Hopefully set
them up.
Well,
the first video is 3.5 hours long.
So. Yeah. So, all right. Moving right along. So, Earl, we'll hand it off to you.
All right. Well, itworld.com has a fun story about old computer technology still in use today. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, you hear rumors about old retro computers actually still being in production use somewhere. Mm-hmm. But you kind of scratch your head and go, well, you know, is that just an urban legend or are there people still using it? And it turns out in this article, they've got some specific examples, and a couple of them are on deck computers, which I thought was interesting. So one of them is a Microvax that's still being used. The other is, I would always hear about the government using PDP-11s. And I was thinking, gosh, in this day and age, what are they still using those for? And I won't spoil the article, but there was still a use, you know, near and dear to our hearts. So you should go over and take a look at this. This is also why, in some of these cases, you still see a demand for the old spare parts. Why, if you get online, you'll find, you know, why are these companies like these resellers still selling spare parts for PDP-11s? Because a handful of them apparently are still in use for things like manufacturing control processes and design control and that kind of stuff. So anyway, I thought it was a fun article. It's a quick read. It's just four pages.
It's funny. It ends with about Windows XP, which is over a decade old now.
It is, you know, coming up on its sunset for official support, but I know we've still got XP computers in my house, so we've still got some old technology going here. I guess if it's older than 10 years, it's retro, but I don't really consider XP retro yet. So.
No.
But we've had that conversation before. Retro is kind of squishy to, you know, figure out what does it mean exactly. But these things in this article are definitely retro. So take a look.
One thing not in the article which pops to my mind that was, and I can't think of specifics, that was still in use, but, you know, the United States just retired the space shuttle fleet. And I know that, I'm sure they, I know they I've seen articles and that stuff has been upgraded over the years, but still that a lot of those shuttles and the systems surrounding them and everything, we're still using a lot of old technology.
Mm-hmm.
I know, what, right? When there's a lot of, you know, stories about, like, you know, old XT type of, you know, computers still being used and that type of stuff on board, like Intel 8088s and stuff like that, system boards and things.
And it turns out, you know, I mean, a long time ago, I wrote a program for our PC support department, like to track work orders and purchases and stuff. This was back in the 80s. And it turned out that over time, rather than spend the money to upgrade the program, that is the development time, it was cheaper to just buy faster machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out in a lot of these cases, this is what they do. They don't upgrade the code. They just use the old code, but they move it to some faster hardware. Like it, they're actually...
And they emulate it and such.
Right. There are boards out there that are designed, you know, in this one specific case, to emulate a PDP-11 system. And so you just move it over to an emulator, and you're still running the old code, but it's a much more reliable and modern platform that you're running it on. So there's a lot of that. I mean, I think there's a lot of that in the financial industry, too.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
All right, Carrington, you take it away with Project Walter.
Project Walter. Well, that is something that got, it actually got announced back in January. It's an Australian fellow. I think it's pronounced Lucchese. What he announced and began working on is this really, really cool little project. He took a Parallax Scribbler 2. That's a little, think of it as a little logo robot. So it's a very hackable robot. You can tell from the name, it's the sequel to the Scribbler, the little blue one. The Scribbler 2 sort of adds extra, I think it added extra ports. It changed something to do with the wheels so it can go straighter. I remember reading or watching a video about it ages and ages ago. But what caught my eye about the Walter is what he's done is adapt a Scribbler 2 so it can be controlled by Logo on a 2GS. So that's what got launched back in January. We sort of got announced. The project got announced back then. The Scribbler 2 has a little Bluetooth. If I recall, that was a few months ago now. He was adapting using a USB to a TTL converter to adapt the Bluetooth signal from a computer, so he could then use an RS-232 connection into a 2GS and send serial signals now to the Bluetooth adapter, which let you control the Scribbler 2 by a 2GS. So what's happened is, most recently, there's been an update to it, and so I want to bring everyone's attention to it, because it's really come a long way. So Walter now can be controlled either in Logo mode or directly. Placed a pen lifter. There's a few different kits out there that you can build pen lifters for the Scribbler. So it's just really interesting to see. It's one of those things that I always wanted as a kid, a robot that I can control either through Logo or something else from my computer. I mean, in the 80s movies, there's so many different versions of robotic arms and robotic turtles. And you can buy vintage ones now. They're still available on eBay and stuff, but they command quite the hefty price. So it's just really interesting to see this project coming along using things that would be readily available. You can go out right now and buy yourself a Scribbler 2, and the 2GSs are readily available. So this is the kind of project that you could homebrew yourself very easily. And I just really like the stuff that he's doing so far. So it's a fellow named Lucchese. We'll have from Australia. I'm going to say Australia. If he's in New Zealand, he's going to be mad at me. But I'm going to stick with Australia. And so there's lots of info. He's had two updates now to the Walter project. And I just want to draw attention to it because I just think it's really, really cool what he's doing.
That is neat that you can control it from a retro computer.
Mm-hmm.
And from a language that actually has those primitives to, you know, move forward, turn right, that kind of stuff.
Oh, how yeah, it's just fun. Made for Logo. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's like screams, use me with Logo.
And I love any time that retrocomputing and the Parallax propeller chip or, you know, any products from Parallax kind of intersect, because it's like two of my hobbies, you know, that kind of merge into each other.
And I think that's one of the differences between the Scribbler 2 and the original one is I think the 2 is it has a propeller, and the original didn't. So it's
does the original have maybe the basic stamp? I don't know about the Scribbler line, but you know,
I only really became aware of it when it got launched as the Scribbler 2. So I remember the Scribbler 1 being a little more basic, and I think it was aimed at really beginning robot players. So beginning roboticists, I guess you use the word. I don't know.
Nice, nicely done.
Sure, why not? But this Scribbler 2 just really appeals. And I love the design. I love the fact that there's like that hole down in the middle sort of screaming out for, you know, you could have a marker go here and be able to lift up and down. Like that, just thinking ahead that way is just fantastic. Like it's just really, really – and it's got a little sensor on the back wheel.
So they had in mind – I mean they had the turtle in mind, didn't they, then, with the Scribbler? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Sort of obvious nod to
it? Yeah, they must have.
So the whole thing looks – the Scribbler 2 looks awesome. The Walter Project looks super awesome. I just wanted everyone to sort of be aware of it in case they weren't.
If anybody has a Scribbler 2 and is coming to Kansas Fest
– please bring it.
That would be a fun demo to see, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be an awesome demo to see. I would love someone to bring something like that. That's just the kind of thing to send down hallways.
Why don't
like,
you bring like, one?
Why don't I bring one? If I get one before then, I will.
How much are they?
$1 billion.
They don't, you know, I can say Parallax makes really nice products, but especially on some of the robotic stuff, they don't give it away. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I could look it up while you guys are talking.
Yeah, I'll move on. I was just looking
at
the store.
You look it up while you're talking, Mr. I can't multitask. Let's
see if I could quickly find it. So, okay, maybe you can look it up, Earl. So moving along then, our next one, see, is me. So I was contacted by, well, let's just move on to it. Here's a press release from Amiga Forever by Klonto. You guys familiar with
Klonto? Yep.
Okay.
I have an earlier version of their product.
Okay, so maybe you can speak a little more to it because I've been familiar with it. I haven't had an opportunity to check it out yet, though I want to. But they've released a new version of Amiga Forever and C64 Forever, the 2012 R2 versions.
So one of the beautiful parts about their package is that they're officially licensed to provide you with those Amiga ROMs,
okay.
Which, you know, I mean, it's you guys know it's this gray area in the emulation community. I mean, mm-hmm. when you're running a Commodore emulator or Atari or Apple or whatever, do you really have the machine that has the ROM? And if not, are you out of technical compliance? And, you know, nobody really cares, but somebody might or whatever. In this case, you're 100% legit because they can license you the ROMs for real. They package it up with a nice combination emulator. It's got a live environment, so if you can boot off of your CD, you can boot your computer right to being an Amiga. So, and, you know, they package it up with nice documentation and a user interface. So it's a good package. I've really enjoyed mine. I have an older version. I think I'm probably 3 or 4 revs back now, but they just keep coming out with better stuff.
And they're DVDs, and so basically they have the emulators and then the software.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I had heard from, his name is Mike Battiliana. Have you ever spoken to anybody there, Earl?
Have not.
Okay. So Mike had let us know of that. But then the name of the company, I guess, is Klonto.
Klonto.
Klonto.net. So.
Yep.
Sorry.
But I got to mention this whole calling it Amiga Forever, C64 Forever. As an Apple guy, this is all very suspiciously similar to Apple II Forever. I'm just saying.
So
what other Forevers can we think of? I think.
There are no others.
You know, what do they say? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Is that what they say? I said that first.
But Karen, you got to admit that whole Apple II Forever campaign wasn't. I don't think it was very successful.
It was successful. It was true. Move on.
We won't mention this conversation at Kansas Fest, though.
Yeah. Scribbler 2 will cost you $140.
Wow.
With USB adapter and cable.
I don't know. That doesn't sound that crazy to me.
I would think you could kind of build one.
I didn't say it's out of line. I just said it's not, you know, it's not $20.
Well,
so,
I actually was worried it would be something like $399. They do have a bit of a rep for being very expensive. So I'm thinking it's less than I was braced for it being.
No, they've got some robots that are in, you know, the higher price range. Like, mm-hmm. I think the, what's that one that they have? Oh, you know, their new quadcopter. That's not really a robot. That's a, you know, flying machine, but I mean, that's $600.
Right.
And they've actually got a gas-powered robot. I don't know if they still make those, but those were unbelievably expensive. I don't see them anymore on their list, so they must not, maybe they don't make that product anymore.
Well, these
sorry,
have,
Parallax,
like,
if I'm like
I think it was called an Eddy or something, the Eddy robot, and that was like well over $1,000.
Yeah, the Eddy's interesting, too. I mean, we could go down a rat hole here. Gosh, do they still, they must still make the Eddy because they were showing it off at their latest Parallax Expo that they had
right,
there
okay.
at their headquarters. So, anyway.
That's another propeller one.
Moving
Yeah.
Well, so, the Eddy is actually controlled by a laptop, as I understand it, and a Kinect sensor. So the thing can follow you around. It's almost like a real-life R2-D2.
Right. Well, because it's one of the – what's that? There's a Microsoft thing.
Oh, here we go. The Eddy
robot
developer platform.
Something?
This,
the robot
yes.
developer studio? Yes. So and it works with that. So,
so $1,250 for the Eddy.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah. It's crazy.
And yet I want all of them. I want all the robots in the world.
They are so cool.
Yeah.
Well, Earl, you take it. Take the next one, then, is your topic. So about the ZX Spectrum's chief designers reunited?
Yes, and first I'll say ZX, because I've been corrected by my
yes.
European and Canadian
like
counterparts.
Say,
I forgot.
like yep. that band I love, ZZ Top. Oh, yeah.
nicely done. So, you know, some of the designers...
But Earl, don't you dare allow our American dominance to be undermined.
of the ZX Spectrum. I love you guys. Got together and were interviewed and had some interesting things to say about the legacy of the Spectrum. And one of the things that I found the most interesting on this article, and it's over on the Beeb. You can see it at bbc.co.uk, was the focus on cost for the Spectrum. That apparently Sir Clive Sinclair was kind of in the same vein as Jack Tramiel, interested in making sure that these things were super affordable so that they could capture a big chunk of the market share. And according to this article, apparently in the UK it worked that Commodore, even though they were also focused on low cost, was never able to unseat the ZX Spectrum in terms of the best-selling computer over there.
Hmm.
And, you know, once again, don't want to spoil the article, but interesting to hear about some of the culture of this thing being developed, about the trade-offs that they had to make because they were focused on cost, and yet they still came out with a really compelling, really popular machine that got people interested in programming and also was very popular, obviously, in the gaming realm. I mean, you can see a lot of the ZX Spectrum stuff today out on the web focuses on the games that were developed for that machine. Mm-hmm. I actually have a couple of these, the Spectrum 128s. I'm just still scrambling to figure out how to get a power supply and a PAL monitor so that I can actually use them. But one of the Retrobits listeners kindly sent me a couple of these actually shipped from the UK. So
nice.
I'm trying to, yeah.
Instead of
yeah.
a PAL monitor, you also might be able to just get a PAL converter.
I thought about that. So have you ever used one of those? And
I do. Yeah, I've got one, in fact.
And so what do you find about the quality? Is it okay?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just... So PAL to NTSC, I think all it's doing is chopping off a couple of lines on the bottom, so I don't think you get the full
what
image.
What about
but
the
I
frame
used it
rate?
For a few...
It's 50 versus 60.
Yeah,
right?
No, but it's the one I have works fine. I could bring it to Kansas Fest, maybe you could take a look at it. But I've got a little PAL converter that I had used ages and ages ago. I picked it up when I didn't have a different way to do. I think it was for some Region 1 or Region 2 DVDs or something like that. I just now use just a different DVD player for them. But I had a converter. You know, I don't even remember the project I picked it up for, but something. But it does work perfectly fine. You plug it in, and it just looks like it's not high def though, like because it's just recording a PAL to NTSC signal. So, to my eye, it already looks fuzzy.
Hmm. So you know what? I didn't dare bring a Commodore to Kansas Fest. But maybe bringing a Spectrum wouldn't get me killed. So if I can get a power supply for it, I'll wrap it up real nice and I'll bring it, and we can try plugging it in. And
cool.
See what
I've
happens.
Also got a. A SCART converter, so PAL to SCART, and you could use that to plug into a SCART monitor. So I guess there's two ways to do it.
Gotcha. So anyway, check out the Beeb for this article and for some of the thoughts of these guys, you know, that 30 years ago developed this highly successful and popular computer.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of other links we'll include as well, just the two sort of related things. One is a ZX Spectrum game, Head Over Heels, one of the few Spectrum games that I played and could remember. I have very little experience with Spectrum. And Head Over Heels was a very fun, if very difficult, puzzle game where you have two characters, two dogs, if I remember, and one called Head, one called Heels, and they had two different ways of moving. If I remember right, Heels could move really quickly, and Head could jump high and move in the air. And that's been recently ported to iOS, so you can get yourself a high-def version. I think Elite Systems, probably. They're the ones porting all the ZX Spectrum stuff. So that's available right now, recently awesome. Launched. And also a really fun article called Computer Nostalgia is 10 Print Bollocks, as in Edward Bollocks go to 10. Yeah. And it's a nice, unfortunately, a two-page thing. I hate it when stuff gets broken up. It's over on, reghardware.com. And it's not making the stance you would. It's not taking the stance you might think just from the name, like, oh, you know, computer nostalgia is bad or something. It's more saying that it's often false. This guy had memories of using a computer, or his neighbor having a computer, that he, in looking into it, couldn't have been the case. So it's sort of about how we can falsely remember things that we think we liked as a kid. But it sort of goes to interesting places. It's a very short article, but it's also very, very funny. And it's definitely worth a view. And one of the things I really liked about the article is he brings up a record that he had, or thinks he might have had as a kid or something. And on the record, track 6 on side 2 was a ZX Spectrum game. And it was the code. And so what you had to do is have a microphone or hold your cassette player up to the speakers and press, like, load on your ZX Spectrum.
That's wild.
And then play the record and the sound.
How awesome.
I don't think I've ever heard of that being done on a record.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
So I wanted to bring that up because I was wondering if anybody had any experience with this, because it's a Pete Shelley.
I mean, it's just another form of audio. I mean, so just like using MP3s now and stuff.
Hilarious.
So, yeah, so I wanted to draw attention to everyone to that because I love the idea, and I wonder if any of the listeners had experience with
that. That would be a neat hack that's, like, tried now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm going to make a whole episode of RetroBits do that. You know, just, you know, you're going to have to play this into your computer to read what I'm saying.
Awesome. So anyway, I don't think I've encountered that before, code in LP format.
On an LP,
so that you
have, wow.
Yeah, so I mean, cassettes, obviously, but never LP. I don't think so, anyway. It doesn't ring a bell. But again, maybe my nostalgia is incorrect. But the article is definitely worth reading. It's short, it's funny, and it's got details about that album. So since you were bringing up the ZX Spectrum stuff, I thought I'd throw in a couple more links.
Perfect.
And Carrington, you have the next topic.
Oh, I've just got tons of stuff to talk about.
Before we move there, though, I wanted to mention, you know, obviously, as I just cleaned out my garage, a computer that was given to me probably a good year and a half ago, and I've never plugged it in, and so it's a keeper, and I want to try it out. Is a Timex Sinclair 2068 that I have, which is essentially the American ZX Spectrum.
Right.
And so I'm really looking forward to play with that sometime in the near future. So I was just looking it up to make sure, because I was pretty certain that's what it was. So okay.
Isn't that one actually kind of rare at this point?
I would
2068.
I think so, but I don't have data on it. But I don't believe I've noticed a lot of those.
I don't think you see them. Yeah, you don't see them come up too often on eBay.
Nope. You see the ZX Spectrum quite a bit. I had one of those, but I don't think you see the 2068 much.
Yeah, you do a follow-up video. I'd love to see that one.
Okay. Yeah, I'll make sure to put it out. It's a very nice-looking little computer. You know, it's aluminum-looking. It has a little door thing on the right that lifts up to put cartridges in and such. But okay, yeah, I'll make sure to do that. So, Kiernan, go ahead and take it away about the Micro B.
Well, yeah, this episode seems to be all about the other parts of the colonies. We were talking about England and Australian stuff before, and so we're going to go back to Australia. There's a computer that I know very little about, the Micro B, but I've heard about this.
Yeah,
and I guess if you went to school in certain years over in New South Wales in Australia, you probably were you probably experienced the Micro B, because I guess they had a big education department backing or something like that. So it was like, and I believe it started as a kit computer as well. I'm kind of vague on it. But the interesting thing is it's got a comeback. The actual Micro B, 30 years later, 25 years later or so, has now come back out. They're doing a limited edition run of 100 of them, and it's now just been released for production. So you have a short opportunity if you want to, if you've got some nostalgia that or false nostalgia for the Micro B, and you want to get your hands on one of these kits. I don't think they're going to be cheap. I think they're going for $400. So if you compare that to some of the little retro style kits that are out now, it's considerably more pricey, but very limited edition. And if it's something that was like resonates for you, if you're an Australian listener and you used the Micro B as a kid, here's your chance to get a hands on an actual Micro B brand new kit version that's just been released for production, but again, just 100 copies.
And currently the Australian dollar matches the US dollar almost exact. So $399 is $399.95 US, and Carrington Canadian, that's $435 Canadian dollars. And how about
Canadian dollar is kicking everyone's butt.
And that is 300.
It looks like we're too late already.
309 euros.
We've had a fantastic response and are no longer taking registrations of interest.
Son of a...
Well, so hopefully, if you were really excited about that, you're one of those people who already got one.
Too bad.
So, it's just, I just like the idea that like an actual... It's like, Commodore coming back. Like the actual Micro B comes out. Here it is. It's the real one being re-released, but with, 2 megs of... I think it was 2 megs of RAM, but it's still got a Z80 processor. Like it looked like a really cool kit. All 100 went. So if they went that quickly, maybe they'll do another run.
Well, to finish out this segment, and I'm going to save one entry I have along these same lines, two reproduction kits and so on, for next show. But I'm going to just mention these links real quick in wrapping up the segment. So one link is what Google would have looked like in the 80s. And so you definitely need to go there and check it out, because it's hilarious, and it actually works. It's like, Google is if you're dialing in through a BBS,
mm-hmm.
all text-based, ASCII character-based, and it's just great. So check that out. And then I wanted to mention three books that have fairly recently come out. So let's see. The first one is called The Future Was Here, about the Commodore Amiga. And so when did that come out? Oh, April 13th. MIT Press, it's 1779 through Amazon. So it's all about the Commodore, Amiga. And the next one is called Inventing the PC, the MCM70 story. And I think this one came out a little while ago. We might have even mentioned it before. Yeah, it came out like a year ago. I think it's one of the things I've been meaning to mention May 10th last year. So it's $40. And do you guys remember us maybe ever talking about this?
No.
It's sort of like a...
I never ring a bell.
In May 1973, Microcomputer Machines, a Toronto-based electronics company, gave a public demonstration of a small computer called the MCM70. So I think that they argue that this is, the first real personal PC computer.
If you look hard enough, you will learn that Canadians do invent everything. Including
ultimately.
History, yeah. And lastly, here is a book which, in fact, I just bought on Audible, so it just got released as an audiobook, but it's called Insanely Simple, The Obsession That Drives Apple's Success. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there's a Kindle version, there's, hardcover, paperback. That's 4 out of 5 stars, there's 16 reviews, so there you go. So there's some books recommendations, or just book listings. So moving along, then, we're going to come into our retro computing gift ideas. We've all been really good, haven't we? Oh, there's my thing. That's right, I stuck it in the retro gifts. I was wondering why I didn't put it in the news or items of interest. Anyway, my item. But anyway, Carrington, you go ahead with yours. Because I thought I did. I'm like, where is it?
We can hear you when you're thinking out loud that way.
I know.
Say it, dude. So I am choosing a little item from Etsy. I think it's pitched as something that'd be perfect as a wedding gift, but I think it's just adorable. And it's a computer geek love hand soap dispenser. And so you can get it from Etsy. It's just $6. And they will customize it with whatever name you'd want. So if you're buying it for a couple or something, and it's adorable. And it has two little computer people with a connection between them. And it says, you know it's love when you memorize her IP number to skip DNS overhead. And I just think that's adorable. So just a little $6 gift, and I think it would make a perfect little shower gift or something if you have a retro geeks.
It's clever, too, but it looks like the lady that makes this specializes in customizing these hand soap dispensers. I kind of think maybe, you know, she ought to try to run with this particular little logo thing on different items.
Oh, sure, yeah. Computer people on a bunch of things. I like the logo. I love the saying, and I just think it's $6. So nice, cheap, great little. And I've never seen something like this before, and I hadn't seen the slogan, so I really dug it. So that's my choice.
Yeah, she could maybe contact ThinkGeek.
Oh.
So Earl, you have the Sojourner keyboard. Sojourner,
I do.
Right.
So a little backstory on this. First off,
my God.
With the red keyboard last time.
With
you can't pick a keyboard every time.
It's a theme.
I've changed my mind. I've just looked at this.
Yeah, good Lord. Look at this keyboard.
Look at this thing.
I know. So little backstory on this. Yeah. Normally, I want to try and pick retro gifts that are, you know, under $100 because it's a gift idea, right? On this one, uh-oh, I'm going a little bit out of bounds. These keyboards are between $1,100 and $1,400.
Wow.
If I'm reading the site right. But again, the backstory. So my wife and I enjoy sci-fi shows, and one of the ones that we watch is Warehouse 13. Are you guys familiar with that show?
Uh-uh.
No, but I've had it recommended a few times.
So, kind of the theme, one of the themes of the show is this sort of steampunk, ambiance or steampunk motif. And some of the technology in this mystical warehouse is old but yet modern. And this keyboard is one of the main props. And whenever I would see Artie, he's one of the main characters on the show, sitting down and typing at this keyboard, I was like, oh my gosh, I have got to get me one of those. That is so cool. And so I went out looking on the internet and found that, yes, indeed, you can actually buy one of these keyboards from the manufacturer, if I'm reading it right, that made it for the show. They're brass, they're polished. The keys are specially handcrafted, you know, these round kind of. So if you think.
Yeah, they look like old tapered keyboard keys.
They do. And if you think of the concept of steampunk, you know, which is this merging of the old and new technology, then also you can get this keyboard either in the polished look or in the artificially aged look. So you have this brass that looks like it has, you know, had some tarnish over the years. Like maybe they say here it's been in somebody's backpack who's running around the world looking at archaeology and that kind of stuff. So you pretty much have to see it to believe it. So go take
a
look at the pictures.
There's a whole, I would recommend everything else on here too. There's a scanner, but it's wrapped in like an old leather bound book. And you open it up and inside is a scanner, this whole steampunk scanner. There's some amazing things on here.
It's a fusion of art and technology, and they say that. They say, you know, this, while you could definitely use it, I mean, these keyboards are 100% usable, and they have a nice mechanism, and they say in terms of noise, on a scale of 1 to 10, they're like a 3 or a 4 sort of thing, so they're not clacky like a Model M, but they're not totally silent either. But they say this is really more for art, so you're buying the art.
Also, if you're a bit DIY, for $400 for brass or $300 for aluminum, you can buy the shell of it to insert your own keyboard and then attach your own keys and stuff. So mm-hmm. if you want that machined brass or aluminum body around the outside, which is really cool looking. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's still $400, but gorgeous. And certainly you could make the keyboard part maybe and glue on keycaps, but I couldn't have made that shell.
No, I mean, look at this thing. Look at some of the close-ups. It's just
gorgeous. This is gorgeous. Yeah, there's a laptop on here, a clockwork gearbox laptop thing. I just want to cry. It's so beautiful. Holy crap, Earl.
I do like that steampunk kind of stuff. I'm not necessarily real big into the genre.
Ages, but I can't get enough of it. Yeah,
but I like the set pieces and that sort of things a lot. And this show looks very interesting. So I put a link in the show notes.
Warehouse 13 is fun. That's a fun show. Now, it's not like hard-hitting sci-fi. You're not going to watch it if you're expecting, you know, Academy Award-winning stuff, but it is a very fun show and an interesting premise.
Yeah.
So. I happen to prefer non-Academy Award-winning stuff, so sounds appealing.
then you might like it, yeah. And so the site, datamancer.net, and I think you'll like it.
So now moving into my choice, and I'm pretty certain this has come up. We've talked about it. And frankly, I didn't really know a lot about it. I kind of refound it because I've been looking more into the Raspberry Pi, which currently you can't get them right now. You can go to the website and show interest to the two different.
I want one so badly too. I thought I had a hookup on one of those, and I don't.
Well, they're starting to trickle out, though. I mean, people.
Yeah, people are just starting to get them from the last orders and stuff. But I'm on the list to be notified, so I'll update her on. But anyway, so I looked into again about the Fignition, and it's just a little simple board that you can put together, and it's essentially sort of a modern 8-bit computer. It has 8K of RAM. You can expand it. I purchased one, and it's on its way, and it's from a guy in the United Kingdom. And with shipping, I think it was it's 20 pounds. I should be able to remember this. It was like $37 shipped. So nothing crazy. It looks like fun.
Hey, it runs a version of Forth.
Yeah.
That's nice. Forth is really well geared for smaller footprint type computers.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
is very efficient.
So basically, I purchased one. I put another link to, the link where you can buy them. And also, I immediately heard from Julian, is the owner, and he asked me if I had any questions for him, which I did ask him some questions, and I hadn't heard back from him yet. So next show, I can mention some of the answers he gave me, some different things. I asked him too about what does he think of the Raspberry Pi, comparing his Fignition board to it, and things like that. And maybe that's something we can talk about more next show, is a little bit more about the Raspberry Pi, because personally I think it's going to kind of become that sort of platform for a lot of retro computing, reproductions and such.
I hope so. And it's nice another that you can actually too. Tie into the hardware on the Raspberry Pi and, you know, do your own kind of mods to it.
Yep.
So
we can talk more about it, but if you do a search for Raspberry Pi and you go to the Raspberry Pi webpage, I tweeted this recently. There's a recent article, someone comparing it and the Arduino and how they're confused and how there's different things that you can do with them and how they both have their strengths and pros and cons and how you can use them together and stuff. So it's pretty interesting.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. Because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
So okay, so moving along, we're gonna just quickly look at last show's auctions. And so Carrington, have you looked at how well your Infocom poster did?
I have not, but
take
if I
a
recall,
look.
It had bids, so it must have sold. 14 bids sold for $640.
Yeah.
I picked a Zork one Infocom poster from a Zork users group. So yeah, sold for quite a bit. Holy
I don't
cow,
know if we had predicted it. I don't think I would have thought it would get quite that much.
But it sold and it's gorgeous, and I wish I had it.
Me too.
I wouldn't spend $640 on it, but I do wish I had it.
And I chose two Byte Shop Byte 8 Early S100 personal computers. And so the main one, did it sell? Let me see. Oh, wait, it still has relisted. So they're asking $1,500, didn't sell.
Whew.
And now they're asking $1,000, or $1,250 by it now. So it still has not sold. So then looking at the other one, which I remember was a little cheaper. Let's see. Whoops, where's the link? Doggone it. Okay, so here's another one. Was it cheap? This is a more expensive one. This one's $2,999 by it now. It has not sold. I know we discussed this last show. That's getting a little high. So supply and demand, I guess. So anyway, Earl, so you had the Lear Siegler ADM 3A terminal.
And it did sell for $499.
Wow. I think we also, I don't think any of us thought it'd get quite that high, did we?
No, that's a little bit on the high side, I think, for those. But again, in this particular market that's on the upswing, I guess I'm not 100% surprised because it is one of those patriarchal kind of terminals.
You know, it was pristine, too. This one
VT-100,
was especially.
Yeah, it's a nice shape.
Really nice. Yeah, I'm looking at it again. Super, super nice. But yeah, $500. Whew. So Carrington, you can take your auction this time.
Well, this time around, I'm going
big surprise.
Apple stuff. Big surprise. There's currently, and I'm going to have an alt pick as well. But currently, what caught my eye was there is a nice, relatively clean and complete boxed up copy of Apple IIgs System 6.
Always like the box.
I always like the box too, and that's part of why I'm picking it. The current bid is only $21.50, so you know it's getting up there. But this is not the sort of thing that's going to sell for $500 or something. But it does have four bids, so there is interest in it. And so it's just got, you know, the discs and the box and the original bound manual, the user's guide. If you've got a 2GS, you know, you'd be well aware of System 6. So that's my choice. I'll also point out the fact, though, that if you go over to 16sector.com, who took over the stuff for Syndicom, you can buy right now the Apple IIgs System 6.01 discs and the manual for $15. So if you're not interested in it for something collectible, I don't know if everybody knows that that's the sort of thing that's available. So if you go and pick yourself up an old Apple, you should be aware of the 16sector.com site so that you can buy things like copies of your operating system and that sort of stuff. It's a terrific place to just sort of be aware that exists. And so for $15, you can get a copy of 6.01 on disk and also the printing of the user's guide, like sort of already punched, ready to put in your own binder. But on eBay, my choice right now is the 2GS System 6. They say new in the box. It's really not that new. it looks a little used, but it does, I think, look complete. So and I like the box. So that's my choice.
Why does Syndicom, why doesn't it have the box? Are they licensed to, like, these are brand new reproductions?
I think so. I know. Yeah, I know it because it used to be Sheppy Stuff Syndicom, and I know it was like a licensed thing. I think through a users group or something.
Yeah, they say
honestly,
APDA on them.
Yeah, so that's it. But I've had the Syndicom site and then now the store.16sector.com bookmarked for ages because that really should be your go-to site if you're looking for something like that. Like, hey, I want to get into Apple II programming. I want to become a developer. I'm looking for a book. I need an operating system. Like, this is where you get it from. So I just also want to make sure people were aware of that.
And, you know, the Apple IIgs System 6 was a very significant operating system for the 2GS.
It's sort of the operating system for the IIgs for System 5. Yeah, totally.
So okay, so now keeping in character, moving towards Earl, you choose a Commodore product.
Go figure. So the
wow,
Kim
that's
one,
nice.
You know, is a single board computer, predecessor to the PET, and you know, designed by the folks there at MOS Technology as kind of a proto environment for people to learn about the 6502. But I've never seen one in an enclosure.
I've seen pictures of them.
I had a Kim 1, and it didn't look like this.
Yeah, so nice little plastic enclosure for the Kim 1. And apparently there was an educational seminar that the seller had gone to where the topic they taught you using a Kim 1 as the educational tool, and it came with this enclosure and with a book on this particular seminar from a place called American Institute. And so he used this a little bit and then kind of stuck it in the closet and then just has recently taken it back out and decided to sell it. It's untested, so it's one of those, you know, caveat emptor sort of things, but the price is certainly reasonable at the moment. Now, granted, it has 9 days left on it, and I'm sure it will go well above this, but the current bid is $81.
How do you power that boy up?
Holy, oh, it's but reserve not met. I was like, there's no, I'm like, how the heck can you sell this for $81?
Yeah,
I
think the guy has a $300 reserve at least.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it'll go for that much. Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's my prediction. If I was to try to sell it, I think I'd start off with a, $250, $300 reserve on it. Because look how clean it is. It's also, it's an early one because it's from MOS and oh no, it does have the Commodore.
No, it's got the chicken head.
Okay, so it's well, I mean, it's still reasonably early though. 12, what is it? 77.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right; it is in beautiful shape. I mean, this picture of the top perspective picture of the board, mm-hmm. it looks like it's gorgeous. That would make sense because it's been in an enclosure, and he said he didn't use it very much. So we'll see how much this.
How did you power this thing on?
I think it just had a standard power supply. I don't know if it was a Walwart. I don't know. I've never had a Kim one. Carrington?
Yeah, I'm just looking like where would you plug that in or wire it in? Or, I wonder if it was ever used.
Mine powered, if I recall. My God, this is so many years ago now. It was a power connector. Like mine sat in a shell case. The one that I got was a kit. I believe it was mostly completed by somebody else, and it was sitting in like a bottom, like almost like a bowl that held it. And the but the power connector was through the side thing.
The edge connector.
I thought one of those was the power. Oh my gosh! You know, I was talking to somebody recently, who tells me that they've got a bunch of photographs of me and my computer stuff from like the 70s. So I may actually have young Carrington with hair photos, including my Kim one. So it might be something I can look into details. She's going to be sending me a bunch of things. A friend of mine from way, way, way back says she has like old photos of me with some of my old computer stuff at the time. So maybe we'll have this answered. Mine definitely didn't look anything like this, though. That I didn't have anything like this shell case thing on top, this black stuff. None of that. I've never even seen one like this before.
It's very nice. So, I predict, like I said, I would think the reserve is 250, 300. I'm going to predict it will get at least that, somewhere around there. I'll just say 300. I'll stick with the first thing I said. Maybe a little bit higher.
I misheard you. I thought you said 800.
Oh, no,
and
no.
I was thinking...
Oh, yeah, no, 300.
I think
a
Kim wanted to get 800, but yeah.
Yeah, because you could probably easily get even over that, right?
When you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see.
So I chose something. I was trying to go something a little different, and I decided to go for like a palm, you know, a palm top, a handheld or whatever. And I was doing searches for the word palm top. So I found this little HP 620. It's a color palm top PC. I really... frankly, didn't look into it that hard as far as, I'm going to guess it's got Windows CE, maybe 2.0, something like that. You know, it is color. It's not that old. And frankly, I didn't look it up what year it is. I'm going to guess 97, 8, maybe. It's very nice. Only buy it now at $30. It works. It comes with a little dock. I mean, very nice little,
cool
computer. And, you know, in palm tops, you can generally get a lot of them fairly cheaply. They take up little space. This was something I had directed my collection, so when I do my follow-up video, I'm going to lay them all out. But, you know, something that's a lot pretty easy to collect and store.
I wonder if the bottom has fallen out of the market with modern things like the iPhone and stuff. Because I remember before the iPhone came out...
Yeah, a lot of these killed a lot of value.
It was a game-changer for me. I looked at so many things. I was never happy with any portable computer or palm top or anything I had. So I tried tons of them, and... Right before the iPhone came out, I was looking at even things like the Model 100, like just so many things. Mm-hmm. Just like,
yeah.
I want something fun to take to things I can't.
They'd go for like $100.
And they used to be quite a bit because and ever since I got my iPhone, my interest in having something like Model 100 just died.
Well, it's funny. I think that the price has fallen out just a little bit mm-hmm. out of the Model 100. I've been noticing on eBay that they've been going for a little bit less than they used to. Not a lot less, but, you know, it hasn't stuck with the trend that I've seen on other models of the price edging upward.
They kind of hold their value because they are somewhat significant in the whole genre of, handheld palm tops or whatever. Those were DOS-based. You know, this being Windows CE, it's kind of a generic, you know, not that important. So...
It's hard to get a sense for how large this is.
Oh, I don't have it in
like looking
arm's
at the
reach here, but I have one similar. But I think it's, if I had to guess, I believe it's roughly 2 inches tall, the screen that is, to maybe 6 inches, 2x6,
okay.
Maybe something like that.
Okay.
Roughly. So that's my choice to check it out. But, you know, $30, buy it now, $15 shipping. You could do worse. So we're going to wrap up the show here, but I want to mention that during the show, I got an email from Julian. So he's a guy with a Fignition, and so he sent us a audio a response. So I guess, how about I just put that in at the end of the show?
Sounds
That'd be
good.
Perfect.
And he can answers. I haven't listened to it, but he's answering some of the questions I asked him. So that'll be great. And maybe we can touch on it some more next time or not. In closing, how about Carrington? We'll start with you. What do you got to tell us? what's going on in Carrington Land?
I had a really good time recording my gear video for RCR. And it sort of made me aware of how much podcasting gear I have, because each podcasting type thing I do, I use a completely different setup. Mm-hmm. And I have tried so many things and been, you know, sort of happy with some and less happy with the other. But I was surprised at the quantity of podcasting microphone type things I have, like two different ones from Blue and the Heil PR40 and a Rode lavalier mic. And I got the Podcaster, which is what I'm using this time, and like just all these things. So I'm going to do a little shootout video or something, I think, to just for people that are interested in podcasting, not so much retro oriented, but it's something that sort of caught my eye. And it's the sort of thing I was looking for when I got into podcasting. So I thought it's nice in one video sometimes if you can hear something without the person changing their voice or changing the atmosphere, and you can sort of hear the different ways that, like, I've got a shotgun microphone, that kind of stuff, and you could maybe hear the way the sound is picked up differently. So if you're interested in getting into this sort of gig, hearing something like that can sometimes help you select what is best for you. So I'm going to do that, I think. Maybe I'll do that this weekend.
I don't know if you said this on the show. I know you told us ahead of time. So, like, here's a power problem at your house?
Yes. I came home. I was away the last bit, and I got home late yesterday. And one of the things I was going to do, I was emailing you guys. I was going to post my video, and I got home. I was like, boy, my building seems so dark. And I'm like,
and that
I have
stinks
to walk up
too, huh?
So I was like, okay. And I guess the power had just gone out when I got home. And when I got up this morning, it was still out. Now maybe it's been restored by now. I woke up quite early, and then I thought I just went for a long ride because the weather's been awesome, and I love my new motorcycle. So I was out for a long ride, and I just yanked the computer with me, and I'm now up at work and recording there, so I'll head back home after this and see if I've got power or if I have to once again walk up 8 flights of stairs.
Yeah, hopefully you do at this point, or that's a serious problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was just my building.
It better jump on
the block or anything. So I was like, just me.
So Earl, what's up with you?
Well, you guys have some nice audio equipment. You're making me kind of feel inferior here. I've got some, you know, kind of
you sound good.
Cheap old stuff. That's all
once
me.
Once you record it and it dump it down to MP3 format or whatever, I don't really know how much of a difference the microphones make.
Yeah.
You know, I think the only thing that makes a serious difference is if you've got a microphone that picks up the more bass side of the frequencies, that you get a little bit richer tone.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had some of those frequencies in my voice. It's on the microphone. It's my little high-pitched Mickey Mouse voice.
Rather than, you know, I heard myself the other day talking on my headset. Mm-hmm. We were doing a recording for some test stuff at work. And I didn't hear any bass in that. It sounded very tinny. And so I thought, okay, you know, I can tell there's a difference when I sit in front of a actual real microphone versus a headset. But you're right, MP3, especially
and
the
Skype,
lower bit rates, does
and we go through
strip
Skype
out.
And it's just, you know, it just Skype kills audio quality. So
that's true.
But it does. The end result sounds pretty good. I mean,
yeah. But anyway, you guys do have nice stuff. But notwithstanding, I did sit behind my little Audio Technica microphone here and record a episode of RetroBits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. You had one come out.
So, yeah.
Of course. Yes, it was so nice to hear a new RetroBits show. I could hear it in your voice at the beginning that you were happy to be back.
I was so happy to be recording RetroBits again. It's been about a year, and so I'm going to start trying to kick them out about 2 a month. You know,
have you had a lot of response to your questions about them, like how to proceed with that programming project?
Yeah, in fact, I have. In fact, I was talking with the guy who created the flyer, that internet modem device that I was talking about. We're kind of brainstorming some of the ways to make this work optimally. So that was fun. Yeah, I got some nice responses on email. I didn't know how many people would still be subscribed after that amount of time, but I've had a little over 1,000 downloads at this point.
Excellent.
So,
I was still subscribed.
I appreciate it. Aw, you guys are cool. I love you guys. But anyway, yeah, that was fun. So that's what's going on with me. And, you know, trying to keep up with household stuff. My daughter, I was mentioning to you guys before we start recording, she's been getting more into the programming and electronics. So I had picked up, again, from Parallax, what's called the Basic Stamp Activity Kit. It's a book called What's a Microcontroller? And a bunch of activities, and, you know, they give you a board and a lot of different experiments to try, and they teach you what's going on. And there's servo motor and LEDs and all kinds of stuff. And so she and I have been working through that. That's been so fun to be doing the propeller head stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Is she aware of Jerry Ellsworth?
I've told her about Jerry before, yeah. And I've mentioned that, you know.
Because she has a YouTube show and stuff like that. Was, you know.
She does indeed.
I mean, it sounds like your daughter doesn't need the inspiration, but, you know.
No, it's always good, though, to let her know, you know, women in technology, you know, definitely something that is actively being promoted. Mm-hmm. And there's another podcast called firstspin.tv. It's a series of podcasts on how to use the propeller chip. And how it works and that kind of thing. And one of the primary person who does that podcast, her name is Addie, and she and she went to the Parallax Propeller Expo that they had recently, and does a really good job on that podcast explaining how it works. And she was kind of coming from the perspective of a newbie, but someone interested in the DIY scene. So firstspin.tv, it's an interesting show if you're interested in learning how the propeller works. So so Jessica's aware of that, and but you know, she's just interested in this stuff. She loves to see it work, so it warms my heart.
Nice, very nice.
I was just looking it up. Her name is Addie, like ADD. Oh yeah, Addie. Okay, because my oldest child, whose name is who's sitting here, by the way, her name is Addie, but her this Addie is ADDIE. And my Addie's.
It's funny because I always thought if I had a daughter, I'd name her Subtracty.
Addie Carrington just said if he had a. It's funny because if he had a daughter, he wanted to name her Subtracty. I had to share that with her right away. So Addie's name is, you know, her proper name is Adeline.
Very nice. So David, what about you? What have you been up to?
Well, for me. Really, what we spoke about earlier, over the, pretty much since the last show, these last 3 weeks or so, the garage project, as well as my office, and thinning out the collection, making some serious decisions, and actually spending time with my stuff doing these things, and that's primarily what I've been doing, other than the rest of my life. And you know, it was a good experience, and it actually allowed me to touch things and play with some stuff that I hadn't in a long time. You know, to check them out and stuff. Like all those Commodore 64s, I made sure they all worked and matched up their power supplies and gathered the cables together and just stuff that really needed to be done. It was fun. And I guess, you know, what I'm looking forward to do is make the follow-up video and maybe actually show some more stuff and show some things I couldn't show because of the mess. and other than that, really, I hope our next show, maybe I might just have a surprise big announcement.
Cool.
Which we've discussed before.
That operation is finally going to go ahead.
Yeah, I might sound different, but it'll still be me.
Nice. No, we're going to have to call you Davette. Speaking of our next show, that is going to be in June. So I just realized that means this is our last podcast where we can tell people that, as everyone listening knows, the three of us are going to head off to Kansas Fest, and I strongly, strongly urge people if you've thought about going to Kansas Fest ever. If you were like,
go.
I always thought about going. I wanted to go for so long, and I finally got off my butt and went. And it's the kind of event, just like, you know, the every year there's the last ever Commodore one we were talking about last show. I don't know how long these things are going to happen. It seems to be on the upswing attendance wise, but who knows? And this year, you know, John Romero is going to be there. So it's a big speaker. The three of us are going. I know Ken Gagne's going. A bunch of the usual people will be there. I think it's going to be one of the big ones, a really good one. If you've thought about going, honestly, like, I think you should get off your butt and go. And May, as far as I remember, you have to the end of May to get the reduced pricing. So if you're thinking of going, don't leave it to the very last minute because it'll cost you extra money. If you sign up and for attendance now – you can get, I know it's some percentage off or some dollar. So it's going to save you money. So sometime in May, before our next show, if you're thinking of going, you should get off your butt and go meet us there. We'll take you out for a beer or whatever. It'd be really fun to hang out with anybody who's a listener of the show. I'd love to meet people in person. It'd be awesome. So let's hang out in Kansas Fest, hang out in Kansas and have a good time. I'm so looking forward to this.
Okay, you have until May 31st. And then
there you go.
And then the things. So, for instance, a double room with meals and conference is $375. After May 31st, it goes to $430.
Exactly. So you're going to save yourself $55. So yeah. That buys all your extra food. But you get your room, you get your meals, you get awesome people to hang out with. It is such an incredible adventure. Like, I cannot express how much I enjoy going to this event. So I'm really hoping some listeners get motivated and will join us in Kansas this summer.
And, guys, we should have three more shows before then, because our next one will be Saturday, June 2nd, and then Saturday, June 23rd. And then we should even be doing one on the 14th of July, which is the Saturday before.
Nice.
And then we're going to do one there, so everybody's going to get an extra show.
Do you think we'll do one that day, or do you think we'll bump it out to actually do the one on site? We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I
have to bump it, because I'll probably be on the road by then. I'm going to go down on my motorcycle, so I might take off on the Saturday and sort of wind my way down towards Kansas Fest for that week. I might, if we record, I'll just go afterwards, or I'll put a microphone in my helmet. It'll be awesome.
And by the way, I did speak to Andy Malloy, who's the sessions organizer. So he does have us signed up as one of the sessions, if you will, doing our show.
And I'm doing a session.
Very cool.
I'm going to be doing a solo session. What about you guys? Have you signed up to do anything?
We've signed up to be on your solo session.
We've signed up to heckle you.
Excellent. I welcome all hecklers. Now,
actually, I do have another session where I'm giving a presentation called the evolution of the third tier of personal computing.
Oh, right, yes. I'm doing something on Form 7. We're going to make in a half an hour period or less. I want to go from initial idea and use improv suggestions from the audience, and we're going to, ideally within a half an hour, develop an entire Form 7 text adventure game, go through bug testing, and have it compiled and exported and as a runnable standalone app within like one 20-minute session.
Cool.
Showing people how easy it is to develop in Form 7.
I submitted a proposal for a session on why Commodore was so much better than Apple. They said it's the first time they ever rejected a session idea.
That's a shame.
I was just shaking my head.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing Andy as well. Andy Malloy is one of the nicest people on this planet.
Yeah, he is.
Such a swell guy. So I'm looking forward. I only ever get to see him at Kansas Fest, so I'm really looking forward to that.
So that's it for this show, show 27. Thanks, everyone, for listening, for being a fan of the show. And as we mentioned earlier, we especially need your help right now. So please, if you could, go to iTunes, take a couple of minutes, do a quick review. That would be great. That would really help us out. Help us grow the show, you know, and by way of iTunes Store, getting more listeners than just on your own, if you could just tell other people about it. Mention it in discussion lists, on your blog, and on Twitter. Tweet about it. You can go to rcrpodcast.com for the discussed links and the show notes. You can always email us at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. And you can follow us at Twitter with rcrpodcast, the @ at rcrpodcast. So, retro compute, everyone, like it's 1999, 1989, or 1979. I tried to mix it up a little there.
Yeah, it was good.
You're so crazy.
Okay, and so now here are the answers that Julian Skidmore provided us to my questions about his Fignition board, and also in regards to the Raspberry Pi. And Jules, thanks very much for providing this, especially in audio format. We appreciate you taking the time to do so. And so now here's his introduction.
Hi, David. Thanks for including me on your Retro Computing Roundtable. It's an honor to have an opportunity to chat about Raspberry Pi and Fignition.
So first I asked Jules, what did he know already about the Raspberry Pi?
I know a few things about Raspberry Pi, and I've had the opportunity to meet up with Eben and Liz Upton at the BBC Micro 30th anniversary in Cambridge about a month ago. They're really likeable people. The Raspberry Pi is really a full modern computer built from a Broadcom smartphone chipset. So the Raspberry Pi Foundation have been working on the concepts since 2006. starting with an AVR-based project that could generate pretty good colour video but didn't have a keyboard or any kind of external storage. So when they expanded it to a more comprehensive system, they found the work involved with adding things like TCP/IP connectivity and other things they wanted was so involved that they decided to move to a more modern system. Their goal really was to produce a computer that you could buy for pocket money, so it'd be a fairly trivial decision to go and get one.
So, Jules, do you yourself have any interest directly in the Raspberry Pi?
I don't personally have a direct use for Raspberry Pi right now, though I guess, you know, it could be tempting to try and find one. But of course, it's a truly interesting machine. In the noughties, I was involved in baseporting Nokia smartphones, so our development teams were well aware that we had fully capable, though relatively slow, computers in our hands. It's high time someone made a real computer from this kind of technology, and although machines like the BeagleBoard were there first, Raspberry Pi is the first to get it into the mainstream.
My next question was, do you see the Raspberry Pi growing as a platform for retro computing?
We know that MAME has already been ported to Raspberry Pi, but I guess the most retro thing about it is that Raspberry Pi is small and cheap, so you could easily put it in, say, a reproduction Commodore 64 case and run a C64 emulator on it. But it would still be pretty tricky to make it convincingly authentic, because you'd have to suppress the Linux boot test, and you'd still find a real C64 would boot quicker and have a hard real-time response that the Raspberry Pi couldn't match, because even cycle-accurate emulators aren't cycle-accurate microsecond by microsecond. So I think it's best seen as an amazingly cheap, modern machine for novel applications, a bit like a super beefy Arduino. It also changes people's perceptions of computers in a way comparable to the iPhone, though in a different direction.
Okay, so back to the Fignition board. What do you see as its primary strengths?
Fignition was first featured on the BBC in late April last year, ready for sale, and the Raspberry Pi was announced, or rather pre-announced, almost a week later for basically the same price. But of course, they're very different machines with different objectives. What I really want is for people to get to the heart of what a real but fun computer is, and for me, that means engaging with it at every level. So the best thing about Fignition is that it's a computer stripped to the bare essentials. I want to cut through the magic. I want kids and adults to be able to build a real computer so that they know they've done something less than 0.01% of the population have done. And I think that's really empowering. Actually, I know it is. You know, I've seen it dozens of times now in workshops at hack spaces and schools. I've met people who say, well, yeah, it's a really nice idea, but I can't solder for toffee. So we sit down and we do some simple soldering practice modelled on Mitch Altman's tutorials, and away they go with fairly minimal supervision. And after a while they finish it, we do some testing and power it on, and time after time people are just blown away with the fact that they can create a computer from nothing. You know, it's just incredible. Fignition's totally about inspiring people. Which is why when you turned it on, you can code on it before a Raspberry Pi has booted, and why it's deliberately restricted. I actually want to limit myself to like 16K of firmware so that I can create a system in 6,000 lines of code, you know, one that can be understood. I want people to understand all the ingredients, switch matrix keyboards, RAM and flash memory, simple video and audio generation. I want them to understand how a simple language works.
And finally, what do you see as its weaknesses, if there are any, based on its design and features and functionality?
And that has its downsides. You know, the keyboard in this case is quite fiddly. You know, I mean, it's much easier to learn than you might imagine, and it's faster than texting on a traditional mobile phone. Fignition doesn't do colour, it doesn't do VGA or Ethernet, though it might be possible to add an Ethernet shield to it. Saving and loading is more effort than it should be. Python and most modern languages are way beyond it, though I think, you know, obviously you could replace the firmware with your own written in C. It's got a language called Forth, and that gets a lot of stick. But I can't help leaping to its defense. You know, as long as you don't expect to write large apps in Ignition 4, you know, it's fun and it's tuned for home computing. It has the immediacy of BASIC, and the syntax and the semantics are so much more simple than C. It's not bad, you know, it's just the way it's painted. But it's quirky, and that's most of the fun of retro machines, isn't it? So bye, David. Thanks again for the chat. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Jules. I can tell you that our little impromptu interview here has turned out to be a great bonus for this episode of the RCR. All your answers are fantastic. I especially appreciate you taking the time to discuss another platform. But it actually puts the Ignition in its proper place, I think, in the proper perspective on it, which is, I can't wait to get mine and start playing with it. And so I think we'll talk more about it in the future. Thanks again.